This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome. Welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. Coming up on Africa News Tonight...
The summit was called after a tentative truce brokered by Russia and Turkey a week ago collapsed.
That's Zlatika Hawk reporting. Details coming up. Also, thousands of documents regarding the business empire of Isabel dos Santos has been leaked. And Gambia's exiled dictator Yahya Jammeh risks arrest and prosecution if he returns back to his country. And heavily armed jihadists carried out an extremely violent attack in northeast Nigeria. We'll have these stories and more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story, there have been mixed reactions in Cameroon to the meeting between the top U.S. diplomat to Africa, Tibor Naj, and opposition leader Maurice Kamto, who says he was the rightful winner of the Cameroon's October 2018 presidential election. Naj also gave an interview in which he said Cameroon officials are not doing enough to solve the separatist crisis that has killed more than 3,000 people in the country's English-speaking regions. While some see Naj as someone proposing solutions, others say he does not know the true situation and should keep quiet. Moki Edwin Kenzaka reports from Yaoundé.
Here's the thing about Cameroon.
This is the voice of Tibor Nagy, the U.S. Assistant Secretary of State for African Affairs, speaking to Radio France International before he began a five-nation tour of Africa last Wednesday. In the interview, Nagy said his mind blitzed because the separatist crisis in Cameroon has persisted and there seems to be no solution in sight. Nagy said Cameroonians in the volatile north and southwest regions love their country but are not happy with the system of government.
What the people in the southwest and the northwest want more than anything else is decentralization. Feel like they have a control over their own lives, their own historical heritage.
Armed groups in the two English-speaking regions want to separate from the rest of Cameroon, alleging discrimination from the country's French-speaking majority. Ernest Ateba, spokesperson of the ruling Cameroon People's Democratic Movement, said Nagy does not have the mandate to speak to Cameroon. He says America should respect Cameroon's sovereignty and understand that Cameroon organized a successful national dialogue that unanimously created a special status for the English-speaking regions, which is gradually being put in place with the expected local council and parliamentary elections and an eventual election of representatives to regional assemblies and assemblies of chiefs. Separatists have also criticized Nagy on social media for saying that Cameroonians are unified. They say they are fighting for an independent state they call Ambazonia. Before leaving for Africa, Nagy met in Washington with Cameroon's opposition leader Maurice Kamto. Kamto maintains that he won the October 2018 presidential election and his victory was stolen by Cameroon's longtime leader Paul Biya. Roger Justin Noah, a spokesman for Kamto's Cameroon Renaissance Movement Party, says Nagy and Kamto discussed the political situation in Cameroon and the crisis in the English-speaking regions. He says Tibor Nagy, just like their leader Maurice Kamto, shares the view that Biya never respects his promises and that the solution to the crisis in the English-speaking regions is the convening of a true national dialogue in the presence of all English-speaking leaders, including those who were arrested and sent to prison, and their colleagues in the diaspora who have been declared wanted by Cameroon. He says during the dialogue, people should be allowed to speak freely and should not be arrested for having contrary views to that of Biya. Minister of Communication René Emmanuel Sadi said calls by Kamto for another dialogue are to distract people.
We did not foresee a more inclusive dialogue than the historical one from the 30th of September to the 4th of October 2019. The absence of an extremist minority which did not want to take part, although invited, could not put asunder the great success of this historic gathering of worthy sons and daughters of the Cameroonian nation.
Cameroon is not on Nagi's itinerary, which includes stops in the Central African Republic, Kenya, Ethiopia, Sudan, and South Sudan. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaoundé.
Isabel dos Santos, eldest daughter of Angolan ex-president José Eduardo dos Santos, and reportedly Africa's richest woman with a fortune of some $2 billion, is already under criminal investigation by the authorities in Angola for corruption, and her assets in the country have been frozen for months. Now she is back in the headlines again because of the leaking of thousands of documents regarding her business empire. Ms. dos Santos has said the allegations against her are entirely false and a politically motivated witch hunt by the Angolan government. But with the new revelations of these documents, it is getting more difficult to sustain the politically motivated witch hunt defense. To discuss the latest on the matter, we have in studio João Santa Rita from VOA's Portuguese service. Welcome to African News Tonight, João.
Thank you for having me.
First, talk to us about these thousands of pages of leaked documents. How did they materialize?
Well, that's the million-dollar question. But what I can tell you is that, as you said, there's hundreds of thousands of them, and they go from emails to documents related to the businesses, which are many because she had about 400 companies and sub-companies around the world. So there is emails, documents from those companies. It runs the whole gamut of her business interests. Now, where did they come from? We don't know. Her husband says that they knew that their private emails and some of their companies had been hacked months ago, and he blames a Portuguese man who's under indictment in Portugal for having hacked the Portuguese soccer league. And so I don't know if that's true or not. We don't know. Now, these documents then were leaked to the International Consortium of Journalists, who then did the investigation together with newspapers like Le Monde in France, The Guardian in England, New York Times here in the United States, and the Portuguese weekly called Expresso. So this is what we know where these documents come from. And they range, as I told you, from everything, business discussions, yes, etc. And of course, what's also interesting is that it gives us a little bit of the lifestyle of the rich and famous too.
So let's talk about what the documents expose. Maybe talk to us first about the lucrative deals involving land, because even before this, there were allegations that she and her husband were allowed to buy valuable state assets in a series of suspicious deals.
Well, yeah. As I said, deals cover a whole lot of things. But as far as the land is concerned, this land is actually a bit of a sad story, because this is land in a prime area of Luanda, which was inhabited for a long, long time by poor fishermen who lived off the sea. And then she bought this land with authorization from the government, which of course the head of the government was her father, to develop it as a very wealthy resort type. These people were expelled to a place, you know, a few dozen kilometers from Luanda, and they live in very dire conditions. So,
wow.
But what's the common thread here is the nepotism in all these deals. That is, the documents allege that she got a lot of these businesses and a lot of these authorizations for business because she was the daughter of the president. So this is where all the the common thread in all this lies is in the nepotism of José Eduardo dos Santos, the president, and their daughter, and of course then her husband, who's a Congolese citizen.
Angola is a country rich in natural resources, so anything in the documents about oil and diamonds and all that stuff?
Yes. This is where the main problem lies, is that these two private state-owned government companies, Sonangol, which is the oil company, and Sodiam, which is the diamond company, they were used as a sort of a piggy bank to finance deals and companies that were formed by Isabel dos Santos and her husband in the oil business in Europe, in the jewelry business in Europe. Now, what's interesting about this is that we interviewed her husband last week, and you know, his answer was quite interesting. He said, well, that might be illegal in the United States or in Europe, but it's not illegal in Angola for a state company to give money to somebody to form a company. And so for me, this is, you know, it might be right, it might not be illegal, but it's the sort of entitlement attitude that they have towards this money. I mean, Sodiam and Sonangol were not going to give you or me money to form companies. So this is where the whole thing lies. But there is a problem, because she was head also of the state oil company.
Exactly.
And just before she, just after she was fired from the position by the new president, she transferred about $57 or $58 million to an account in Dubai to a company which she says was doing a consultancy for the oil company. And it turns out that this consulting company is owned by her associates. So, you know, this is where the things start getting a bit fishy.
Nepotism seems to be the magic word here. João Santa Rita from VOA's Angola Portuguese service.
Exactly.
Thank you for your input.
Thank you. Thank you very much for having me.
You're listening to African News Tonight on The Voice of America. The Gambia's justice minister says exiled dictator Yahya Jammeh risks arrest and prosecution if he returns to the West African country. Reporter Pandera Mbai reports from Raleigh, North Carolina.
The Gambia Police Band performs at Gambia's 2020 legal year anniversary in Banjul, where members of the legal profession converge on Sunday for the yearly gathering to promote respect for the rule of law and good governance. Abubakar Tambedu is Gambia's justice minister. Tambedu began his speech by discussing the progress being made by the Truth, Reconciliation and Reparations Commission to expose the past regime's rights violations.
After a year of public hearings, and as we enter into the second and possibly final year of hearings, it can no longer be ruled out that crimes against humanity have been committed in the Gambia between July 1994 and January 2017 under former President Yahya Jammeh, and that those who will be identified by the TRRC will face certain prosecution in the most serious form.
Jammeh ruled the Gambia for more than two decades. He lost an election and he went into exile in Equatorial Guinea in 2017. Human rights groups, the courts, and thousands of witnesses have said his repressive government committed serious human rights abuses. Jammeh recently announced his desire to return home. The former president told his supporters that no one can stop him from returning. But Justice Minister Tambedu thinks Jammeh belongs in jail.
Make no mistake about it. Barring any findings or recommendations of the TRRC to the contrary, if former President Yahya Jammeh ever comes back to this country, he will face immediate arrest and charges of the most serious kind. He will be subjected to an accountability process like any ordinary accused person in this country. And no amount of irresponsible talk or political brinkmanship will prevent this from happening.
Hassan Boubacar Diallo is Gambia's Chief Justice and also served as a prosecutor at the International Criminal Tribunal for Rwanda.
It is necessary always to remind ourselves that in the absence of the rule of law, a community suffers rule by power. It suffers rule by arbitrariness and by injustices, and that these are all recipes for instability and for retrogression. Peace and progress are dependent largely on the existence of justice and on the existence of the rule of law. We must therefore, as a nation and as a global community of states sharing ambitions for good government, invest in justice in the courts and in the rule of law.
For his part, President Barrow reaffirmed his government's commitment to good governance.
The separation of the three organs of state and the independence of the judiciary are principles which my government will never compromise.
Barrow has emphasized the importance of what he calls a sound national justice system administration, which he says is vital for the stability and development of any nation. For VOA Africa, this is Pan Derimbai reporting from Raleigh, North Carolina.
Heavily armed militants carried out an extremely violent attack on a vital aid facility housing United Nations workers in northeast Nigeria. Humanitarian and military sources say Islamists and several trucks fitted with machine guns stormed the aid hub near a camp holding 55,000 displaced people in the remote town of Nagala on Saturday. The UN says no aid workers were harmed in the assault, but a witness told Reuters that at least 20 displaced people awaiting assistance were killed in the attack. The attack is the latest to target aid workers trying to tackle the vast humanitarian crisis caused by the decade-long jihadist insurgency in northeastern Nigeria. It was not immediately clear which militant group was responsible for the attack near the border with Cameroon. The insurgency by Islamist groups in northeast Nigeria has killed 36,000 people and left more than 7 million in need of humanitarian assistance. The violence has spread to neighboring Niger, Chad and Cameroon, prompting the formation of a regional military coalition to fight the Islamists. World leaders have agreed to provide no further military support to warring parties in Libya to sanction those who violate the arms embargo. But there was no commitment to withdraw existing military support. U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo represented the United States at the summit's Germany's capital Berlin on Sunday to take part in another effort towards peace in a divided country where General Khalifa Haftar challenges the United Nations-backed government in Tripoli. VOA's Zlatika Hoek reports.
At the end of the summit on Sunday, German Chancellor Angela Merkel said that all the participants, including the parties with interests in Libya's conflict, have agreed that the peace in Libya can only be achieved through talks, not the use of military force.
We have to make sure that all the parties that are in any way connected to the conflict speak with one voice. That was the goal of today's conference, because then the parties within Libya will also understand that there's only one non-military way to a solution, and we have achieved that result.
The summit was called after a tentative truce brokered by Russia and Turkey a week ago collapsed. Libya's powerful General Haftar is controlling the country's east and is supported by Russia, Egypt, and the United Arab Emirates. The government in Tripoli, led by Fayez al-Sarraj, is endorsed by the United Nations and backed by the United States, part of the European Union, and Turkey. Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan thanked Sarraj for agreeing to ceasefire and urged Haftar to do the same.
In order for the other phases of the political process and solution to be implemented, it is necessary for Haftar to put an end to his aggressive attitude.
News reports say that Haftar's forces on Saturday blocked oil exports from major ports, and that on Sunday, as the conference got underway, they shut down pipelines in Libya. Oil is one of Libya's chief sources of income. British Prime Minister Boris Johnson said Libyan people have suffered enough in what he called a proxy conflict.
Proxy conflicts only come to an end when the external proxies decide they want to bring it to an end. So that's what the UK is arguing for. We're saying, look, come on, folks, this has gone on for long enough. It's a disgrace. Yes, we got rid of Gaddafi back in 2011, but it's time now to move on and to bring Libya together under the UN.
Supporters for both sides in Libya demonstrated during the conference in Berlin. Zlatica Zahok, VOA News, Washington.
British Prime Minister Boris Johnson today said Britain is an ideal business partner for Africa as his country prepares for post-Brexit dealings with the world. Johnson made his comments today at the first UK-Africa Investment Summit in London with more than 20 African leaders. The summit comes just days before Britain drops out of the European Union. David Doyle with Reuters reports.
Africa is the future, and the UK has a huge and active role to play in that future.
British Prime Minister Boris Johnson called for deeper investment ties between the UK and Africa on Monday at a summit attended by leaders from 21 African countries. That event is taking place in the British capital, London, just days before the UK leaves the European Union. A seismic political and economic shift prompting Johnson to seek greater business ties outside Europe.
More than half the world's fastest, 15 fastest growing economies are in Africa. Two-thirds of African economies are expanding faster than the global average.
At the event, Johnson announced an end to British support for thermal coal mining or coal power plants overseas, saying it made no sense for the UK to cut its carbon emissions at home while supporting coal-fired projects abroad.
To put it simply, not another penny of UK taxpayers' money will be directly invested in digging up coal or burning it for electricity. And instead, we're going to focus on supporting the transition to lower and zero carbon alternatives.
And the Prime Minister also highlighted deals worth billions of pounds with countries on the continent, underlining the roles British companies are playing in providing everything from smart street lighting in Nigeria to environmentally friendly breweries in Kenya.
That was Reuters' David Doyle. And with that, we wrap up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. Please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports coming up at 18:30 UTC. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, John Dryden, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.
Hello, Africa. I'm James Butte, host of VOA's Daybreak Africa. When news breaks, VOA Africa is there, bringing you the news as it happens. Listen to Daybreak Africa Monday through Friday at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC. And our 5 minute newscast come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
The Voice of America's global news program, International Edition, brings you an in-depth look at the biggest news stories of the day. Nobody covers the world more comprehensively than VOA. Our correspondents gather the news and the views of the most seasoned experts on international issues. Tune in Monday through Friday at 3:30 and 17:05 UTC on The Voice of America.
Rock and roll, America's finest export. Our culture and music of today are permanently indebted to the pioneers who trailblazed this musical tradition. Listen to Border Crossings on February 6th to hear rock's greatest musicians like Jerry Lee Lewis, Buddy Holly, and Elvis Presley, only on The Voice of America.
Hey, sports fans, brighten your day by tuning in to the Sunny Side of Sports, Monday through Friday at 1630 and 1830 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. Or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/Sunny. It's the Sunny Side of Sports right here on the Voice of America.